God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. Just a quick note, because it is breaking news, and I think it should probably get some context. Dave Weldon had been nominated to be the director of the CDC. He is a physician, a former congressman from Florida, of course, a Republican. And it was just before he was to go be questioned that they pulled his nomination. He is also one of the best and most complete critics of the poisonous non-vaccines, the COVID shots, which were sold to the American people through a series of lies and blackmail and pushed upon people with dishonest means. There's not a human being in America who was injected with the drug that got the emergency use waiver. That never happened. Senator Ron Johnson can explain that to you if you prefer to get your news from him. They did a bait and switch. They brought on a new injection that was never given emergency use authorization. Not a human being here has that in their arm. And it doesn't stay in your arm, as you well know. I don't think this is a good sign that this guy's nomination has been pulled. I don't think it's a good sign that RFK Jr. is doing some great things with seed oils, which are not good for you, and getting right-sized on our food supply system, but he's not done anything to the injections. It's about time to determine RFK Jr. is, well, a fraud. If they are what he says they are, the shots, and they're still being recommended to kids by the corrupt FDA, RFK Jr. could stop that. The FDA reports into him. He may not be able to ban the shots, but he can pull the suggestion for kids. He's not. We need to be wide-eyed about what's going on. President Trump is doing some great things. Praise God. God's doing great things through him. Surfacing the corruption in D.C. is a great thing. Forcing the Democrats to vote against, as you just heard on the AFR News, forcing Democrats to vote against extending the statute of limitations so that we could prosecute people who stole COVID relief money. That's praise God, to show what they are. A lot of them participated in scamming that money. I think it was Nancy Pelosi's family who got good pieces of the COVID loans, which are never paid back. And let's be wide-eyed. Dave Weldon's nomination has been pulled. The White House has said that he didn't have the votes in the Senate. Well, or he could have fought for the votes. But I think to this day, President Trump is not ready to hear criticisms of his great, great invention. Well, he doesn't say invented it, but Project Warp Speed. And again, I'm in favor of most of what President Trump's doing, but let's be wide-eyed. Let's be wide-eyed about this. The Politico, in a rare instance of reporting something anti-narrative, said in a piece, USAID officials tell remaining staffers, shred and burn all your documents. Senior official at USAID instructed the agency's remaining staff to convene at the agency's now former headquarters in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday for an all-day group effort to destroy documents stored there, many of which contain sensitive information. The materials earmarked for destruction include contents of the agency's classified safes and personnel documents at the Ronald Reagan building, said an email sent by USAID's acting executive director, Erica Carr, and obtained by Politico. Shred as many documents first and reserve the burn bags for when the shredders become unavailable for or needs a break, the email said. Carr instructed staff to label the burn bags with the words secret and USAID/B-IO, agency shorthand for bureau or independent office, in dark Sharpie pen. This is destruction of government property, and it is a felony. Every instance of it. This is not an invasion. They are not in a war zone. This is not Zero Dark 30. It is not Benghazi, praise God. The Taliban are not outside. Islamic terrorists are not outside, ready to seize the documents and the computers. A duly elected president of the United States of America and his people, Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, now run that office. This is fraud. This is a crime. This is a series of felonies. I contend this is seditious. I contend this is treasonous. Good thing we've got Pam Bondi doing nothing. Good thing we've got Kash Patel doing nothing. They should have had federal marshals over there when these reports surfaced. They should have walked in and said, Marco Rubio invited us. When the people at USAID said, where's your warrant? They say, repeat, your boss said we could come. Why didn't that happen? I truly, truly hope that we're not sitting here watching a magician's trick with all the flash in front of us of the Doge monies being surfaced, the unbelievable corruption. Many of those monies given back. Lee Zeldin has frozen the $20 billion slush fund that was given to, in my judgment, a corrupt bank to hand out willy-nilly to Biden friends and family. Praise God. Thank you, Lee Zeldin. Our Secretary of Defense has gladly participated in Doge efficiency demands, is open to an audit. These are good things. But when the most corrupt agency at the heart of what Doge discovered, USAID, which was famously said, if it's too dirty for the CIA, have USAID do it, is in our faces destroying government property, clearly destroying evidence for what they know could be a massive criminal investigation amounting to actual undeniable acts of treason against America's interests. And there are no arrests. AFR has a really big reach. Praise God. Don Wildman had a vision. God had a plan. That's the title of a book you can buy. It's a memoir from Brother Don. And I would encourage you to call the White House and politely ask in a public comment line, when is Pam Bondi going to do something? Praise God, President Trump has pulled funding from the state of Maine for refusing to stop letting boys steal girls' trophies and scholarships, praise God. But I think it's time for the right to begin to understand what's going on. There is an organized act of domestic terror being inflicted upon Elon Musk's companies and the employees there. And I'm here to tell you, this, I think, will ramp up into violence upon people. And there is a woman in Seattle who's organizing a lot of this. And she even admitted that she draws inspiration from Luigi Mangione. He's the guy who is accused of killing the CEO of United Healthcare. This woman's name is Valerie Costa, and here Valerie Costa explains the idea behind her Tesla vandalist movement.
Val, maybe we could start off with a little bit of, can you just actually tell us what Tesla takedown is?
Or yeah.
It's not takedown Tesla, it's Tesla takedown.
Tesla takedown. Yeah, there's a website called teslatakedown.com, which is a website you can go to, get some background on the campaign. And it essentially is a map where anybody in the world can put an action up for targeting Tesla. And so I've been involved in that campaign, and in particular planning actions in the Seattle area targeting Tesla.
And she continues in this interview, and I wish I knew the name of the gentleman doing the interview. He's almost certainly a leftist, but I'd like to give him credit. I just can't find his name. Valerie Costa talked about the spirit behind her Tesla takedown movement.
In Tesla takedown, there's a spirit out there, which had already, as we saw with Luigi Mangione, there's a spirit which is very anti-corporate, very anti-billionaire, very anti-sort of elite. And Tesla takedown is also tapping into some of that spirit as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I would say it's just what I've noticed being involved in organizing in the Seattle area for some time, especially after the election and the inauguration, people were like, what do we do? We don't want to just waste our energy protesting for the sake of protesting. And especially in Seattle, and I would say on the West Coast, I'm sure it's true of many places, we're really far from the center of power in government.
No, you're not. Valerie, you are geographically far from Washington, D.C., but you are a cash machine for leftists. And every bad idea that has ever launched into this world in the United States that's leftist is put together in the lab that is Washington State. That's where they decided first to put men into women's locker rooms, women's and girls. That happened there. It's the separate country of Washington State where they started with the effort to criminalize speech, literally to pay people to turn in folks who speak wrong. You know, bad thing. And the people who ran Joe Biden flew him out there very regularly to go and collect checks. They did the same thing with Barack Hussein Obama. So you might be geographically removed, but you are the power base. Antifa started there. Well, it didn't start there. It's an European movement, but the American version of Antifa started their training systems there. Now, did you hear the gentleman reference the guy who murdered the CEO of United Healthcare? And did you hear he said a spirit? Yeah. You know what? There's a spirit of murder. And I do think that spirit exists within the Tesla takedown movement. And here, Valerie Costa explains how she realized she could target and attack Elon Musk's Tesla dealerships.
As it became clear that Elon Musk was taking on this outsized role at the federal level, totally, I would say, criminal role nationally, we're like, oh, wait, like, we can target Elon here because his company, the source of the majority of his wealth, has numerous locations in the Seattle area, and ultimately money talks. And we've planned, whether it was troublemakers or partners that we've been working with over the last few weeks, have planned multiple actions at Tesla.
And these actions are vandalism for now. The job of organizers is misunderstood. Yes, it's to get movements like this going, but it's also within these movements to find the people willing to do the most extreme things. And they get passed on from the organizers to the truly militant groups. And I don't think it's a far stretch to think that they keep mentioning Luigi Mangione. I don't think it's a stretch to say that they're also trying to recruit the next Luigi Mangione. So I pray for President Trump, I play for Elon Musk, and I guess, hey, God makes the rules. As much as I don't want to, I have to pray for Valerie Costa. We'll come back and be in the world and not of it. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Thanks for listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Next segment, we'll get to Tower Babbling and a personal notes, as well as an email criticizing Rush used to call himself what was a harmless little fuzzball. All those years I filled in for the Maha, I've never repeated that line. I don't know why that came to me now, but thank you for that. We'll get to that coming up. I am almost completely divorced from pop culture. So, to a bizarre extent, I used to be someone who loved NFL football. I still love the game. If I'm in a place and it's on, it's difficult for me to not watch. Great college football as well. I love the strategies and the tactics of the game, the movement. I love a hard tackle. I love great pass. But because of what the NFL became, I stopped watching it. So I so completely did that. I did not know the Super Bowl was on. And I went down to my beloved pizza place once a week. I allowed myself to gorge on pizza. I've told you this. I exercise two or three times during the day and walk on 4,000 calories behind. I could eat whatever I want. And I sat down and the TV was on and everybody was looking at the TV and the place was packed. It's not normally packed that early. It's a Super Bowl. Oh, wow. Who's playing? People laughed. I said, I don't know. Now, part of this was also a decision during the COVID lockdown hysteria and psyop, because I saw where they were going with the lockdowns. It was a bottleneck, a kill shoot to get us to accept the injections. I saw where that was headed, and I warned my audience at the time, I was doing morning radio in Seattle, please, please, please stop needing to go to football games. Stop needing to go to movies. Please, please divorce yourself from needing this stuff, because they're going to use it to blackmail you into taking these shots. I took my own advice. I stopped needing those things. So I can look you in the eye very often and people will say to me, have you seen the following movie? And I can look them in the eye and say, I have no idea what that is. Are you kidding me? It just won an Oscar award. It was the top selling movie viewed in the last 5 years. You don't know? No idea. So when I tell you that I did not know about Brian Johnson, I hope you'll forgive me. And maybe you know about Brian Johnson. Do you know, this guy is really radically gifted intellectually. And God has given to him a powerful intellect. So powerful that in my judgment, Brian Johnson has determined he is a god. Man, Satan lurks, doesn't he? His favorite trick, it seems, is to take good gifts and steer them towards evil. I was just talking to a brother the other day. He's in a really, really difficult season with God. He said to step away from some things that he really loves. And he honored me by chatting with me about this. And he is unbelievably gifted intellectually. And I said to him, brother, if you were Satan, how would you use your intellect? If you were Satan, how would you abuse that gift? And my brother answered me. He said, to create division, to ruin friendships. So Brian Johnson was one of the early inventors of payment technologies that became Venmo. He was a CEO early on in that process, and his company actually created Venmo and joined with these other companies and became this juggernaut, and he became a wildly wealthy man. He's from Utah. He had been at one point a member of the LDS Church. He left that church. He left all churches. He's now forming one. Or at least a religion. It's called Don't Die. And I'll give him credit. He is doing what he said he was going to do. Not that he's not going to die. He will. But he was going to make his life about living as long as he can. And it is quite a pursuit. So I want you to hear this. This is a trailer for a documentary surrounding Brian Johnson, this man who's doing everything he can to live forever.
As a species, we accept our inevitable decay, decline, and death. I want to argue that the opposite should be true. My name is Brian Johnson. I've been spending millions of dollars creating an anti-aging protocol. I take 54 red light therapy plasma exchanges, and I'm going to be injected with my first gene therapy. I'm trying to be on the outermost edge of possibility for the science.
We published all of his biometric data online. Every spotlight was turned on Brian.
Brian Johnson is a grifter who is trying to make a quick buck.
I really want to have multiple lifetimes with my son. 100 years is not going to be enough. What if you donate your plasma to me, I will to Dad. It'll be this multi-generational thing. We may walk into a future where all of us live healthier and longer. I want to live with everything that I am.
So yeah, I hope you don't die.
He spends a lot of time indoors because he doesn't want UV rays on his skin. He is worth several $100 million, and he's not doing this for money. I don't buy that for a second. He sells product related to this. He steers people to product related to this, but it's been through Amazon links, affiliate links. No serious guy like Johnson would do that without making his own products. It's too smart. So Brian Johnson does take this protocol. He does eat these 54, sometimes I think it now is up to maybe 100 pills a day. He does things like gene therapy. You have to fly out of the country for that. I take my health very seriously. I have a huge and very specific health protocol. Before I get out of bed in the morning, for instance, I consume 96 ounces of water every morning with pink sea salt in it before I get out of bed. I weigh myself every 2 days. I monitor the macrobiotics of what I eat. I eat 55% protein, 25% carbs, 15% fats. This is what I do. I track my workouts for which energy system I'm using. Is it aerobic? Is it glycolytic? Is it phosphagenic? I understand the protocols. I don't want to live forever at all. I have no interest, none, in artificially extending my life here because I know that I can't because it's not mine. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. I was reminded last night of a story about Stonewall Jackson. Do you know how he got his nickname? So Stonewall Jackson, a great famous Civil War general. Some people thought it was because it was a battle around the stone wall. It's actually this, that during battles where people, men were dying and being dismembered, and Civil War was a horribly bloody war, Stonewall Jackson would sit atop his horse, not moving, just observing. And I don't remember the exact quote, but he said in a very eloquent way, "I understand I don't control the timing of my death. It doesn't matter if I move my horse back and forth or try to get out of the way. God determines that. I am indestructible until God says otherwise." Brian Johnson would be wise to heed that, but Brian Johnson appears to be coming convinced that he is a God. Genius and madness are cousins, aren't they? Now, I did watch this documentary on Johnson because I came very interested in this after I read his announcement that he's forming a religion. And this put me in the mind of L. Ron Hubbard. And when I read that he was forming a religion, I wanted to know more about this guy. So I watched the documentary. I saw him fly out of the country to get gene therapy that helped him put on 7% muscle mass. And I admit to you, as a guy who God is blessed to do very, very well in my old man division of the CrossFit Games this year, shocking me. I cannot believe what he's blessed me with. I admit, I watched that and thought, wow, maybe I do want gene therapy. I don't. I watched him relate to his one son, his only child, who will speak with him. Well, not speak with him, but spend time with him. Because he walked away from his family and their faith. Praise God that he's got this relationship with his son, but that son has also walked away from the faith. and at least in the documentary, was pursuing his father's way of living. So this is the thread that drew my attention to Brian Johnson. He wrote this on Twitter-X. Dear humanity, I'm building a religion. Wait a second. I know what you're going to say. Hold that knee-jerk reaction and let me explain. First, here's what's going to happen. Don't Die becomes the world's, becomes history's fastest growing ideology. It saves the human race and it ushers in an existence more spectacular than we can imagine. It is inevitable. The only question is, will you be an early or late adopter? How does God view human pride? He abhors it. Brian Johnson is not going to save the human race. The human race is on a set path explained in the Bible and capped out in the book of Revelation. But back to Brian Johnson's thread. Why is it inevitable? Four fundamental shifts are happening right now. We're giving birth to super intelligent AI. No existing ideology solves AI alignment. With AI, our species survival is not guaranteed. With AI, individual biological death is no longer inevitable. We're at risk of extinction without a unifying framework so to solve human alignment with an AI alignment. Did it ever occur to you that the Antichrist would use AI? I am not calling Brian Johnson the Antichrist. At this point, he's done nothing to look to be the Antichrist. Nor am I a good enough theologian to identify him that way without lots of study. Back to this thread. Why Don't Die? All existing frameworks are too narrow. Democracy governs civic matters. Capitalism dictates wealth. Religion cares for the soul. Don't Die speaks fluently with the universe through physics. AI via mathematics, software via computation, living things via biology, humans via storytelling, truth via metrics. Don't Die as a universal translator and the grand unifying theory of existence. Wow. That's super persuasive. The grand unifying theory of existence. In the beginning was the Word. Or if you like, in the beginning, the earth was formless and void. The unifying theory of existence. Now, when you have that much money and you have actually succeeded, and by the way, Brian Johnson had succeeded in reducing his physical age. And this can be done. I want to be fair to the guy. I really do. He is doing what he said he's doing. He's going to die. We are all going to die. And there's going to come a day where there's a new heaven and the new earth. And if you haven't died at that point, you're going to go through that. But I want to be fair to the guy. He is, in fact, reducing his biological age. I've done the same. I have the heart of a 40-year-old. I'm 57. And that's through a lot of work and diet and focus and exercise. And I love it. I can do things I shouldn't be able to do at my age. I want to be fair to the guy, but that's not me. I didn't build my heart. I did not create my own love of really vigorous, intense exercise. God gave that to me. I have misused it. I have abused it. I've taken that to the cross, but I feel Brian Johnson is using and abusing his intellect, or rather Satan's doing it through him. So back to this thread that drew my attention to him. What does Don't Die even mean? On a personal level, for years, I've tried to eat, sleep, and breathe Don't Die, literally, to embody it in every one of my 35 trillion cells. Practically, this means going to bed on time, exercising daily, eating nutritiously, measuring and improving every organ of my body, eliminating toxins, lowering stress, being with family and friends. As a result, I now have the slowest aging speed in recorded history. Science measurement and protocols work. The same methodological approach can scale to Earth, AI, and the human species. At the end of the documentary, in fact, he did start spending time with people, and I was happy for him. I don't want to see people miserable. He seemed miserable to me. living alone in his apartment with his staff, female staff, by the way, spending a lot of time taking pictures of him. But he's not God. He's not going to live forever. He's not going to save the human race. So I'm sad. Here's this man with this brilliant intellect. And it's so interesting to me that he, having left the LDS church, didn't sit back and say, well, maybe that wasn't the right church for me. But instead found himself alone, and it's not good that man is alone. And then from that aloneness, that loneliness, starting in a pursuit that was exactly inverse of the faith, and this is what's most disturbing. Throughout the documentary, he makes the point that he is driven by his flesh. This is what he says. He is healthy because he listens only to his body and what it wants. Oh my goodness. How many times did Jesus Christ warn us to not be of the flesh? And he's building religion. I do pray for Brian Johnson and his family. We'll come back with the Tire Babbling, a personal note, and a critical email. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Tire Babbling is upcoming. Personal notes. Oh, and an email. Man, it's going to be a busy segment. So let's get started here. Before we get to the Tire Babbling, a couple of cleanup items I think you should be aware of. Here's an update on Enoch Burke. He's the Christian school teacher in Ireland. He's in prison for refusing to partake in the lie of so-called transgenderism.
And the country yes. Falling to pieces.
Yes.
Drugs, crime, murder, out of control. And we've spent almost, is it an hour or more in there?
About an hour or more in there.
Discussing yes. How they can strip Enoch Burke of every right he has because he won't accept transgender ideology.
Yes, and there was a lot of trouble at the beginning of the hearing because in a judgment recently issued by Mr. Justice David Nolan, it transpired it was based on information which wasn't before the court and really could only have come to the knowledge of the court by a back channel. Which is very serious.
Very, very serious.
If a court is to make a finding of fact, it has to be based on evidence, affidavits or evidence sworn in court. But we have this judge, David Nolan, breaking rules, obviously being fed information
behind the scenes,
which is just very serious. So these people are prepared to go to great lengths to pursue
lies.
Enoch Burke.
They're telling lies.
Yeah, they have taken his salary entirely, and he's been in prison for 500 days. One other cleanup item related to this in a way, so-called Congressman Ro Khanna is going after Gavin Newsom for flip-flopping on men competing in women's sports.
You made on X sounds like you might disagree with where Governor Newsom is on this. You've urged your party to get more in line with America where they are on the issues. So what about this one?
Well, Shannon, you know I'm always a straight shooter, so I'll tell you where I stand. I know many of your viewers will disagree with it, but I was perplexed by the governor because he supported, Governor Newsom supported, along with Jerry Brown, a law in California in 2013 that's been on the books for 10 years. And that law says that trans kids do get to participate in sports, K-12, and we have a California intercollegiate federation that sets the standards to balance the inclusion of trans kids with fairness and safety. And so I guess I didn't understand what the governor was saying. And for a decade, he's supported this law. It's still the law on the books. Is he saying we need to repeal that law? I believe that that law has worked in California, and I don't think there should be a federal ban, and we should have these state athletic associations like the California Intercollegiate Federation set the standard so that you balance inclusion with fairness and safety.
You can't. Boys are bigger, faster, stronger, have more fast twitch muscle fiber, larger hearts, more lung capacity, and an advantageous hip to weight waist ratio. Can't be done. But thanks for trying to pretend it can be. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people like Ro Khanna on tall towers of shaking sand with their feature called The Tower of Babel.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babbling.
Is it a boy or a girl? It's a they by Lindsay Harriet. This book is all about welcoming a new baby into the family and not knowing how that baby will identify when they grow up. So we're not going to be assuming their gender.
Three sound bites in today's Tower Babbling starting here. Jonathan Capehart is upset that there isn't enough nuanced discussion on men competing in women's sports.
We're not talking about men in drag pretending to be women in sports. We're talking about trans women, trans girls. What we need to do is, as Americans, and certainly elected officials, have a more nuanced and thoughtful conversation. This is not a black and white issue. This is something that requires a lot of thoughtful conversation led by scientists, led by doctors, led by people who actually know something about this.
Hey, Jonathan, how does someone become so-called trans? What is the blood test? The brain scan? The DNA analysis? How does that happen? Oh, that's right. You just say it. And magically, you're that. Hey, we should try that with brain surgery. Let's try that with brain surgery. You walk into a surgeon and say, I have a tumor in my brain. Please remove it. Well, we need to do a CAT scan and an MRI. How dare you? I identify as having a brain tumor. Now start to cutting. Next soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. Jasmine Crockett doesn't understand what makes illegal aliens illegal.
City law enforcement, local law enforcement, they are always going after crime. And they don't say, oh, you committed a murder? Oh, but you're an immigrant? Well, let me let you go, right? So they are always focused on crime. They continue to say things like the illegals and that they broke the law coming in. But what they're not telling the American people is that it is a civil violation. It is not a criminal violation to enter the country illegally.
It is not illegal to enter the country illegally. Well, that clears it up. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. Hakeem Jeffries wants you to believe that citizens voting in their own country's election is unfair.
Only citizens can vote for the United States Senate. Only citizens can vote for the presidency of the United States. So this extreme MAGA Republican voter suppression bill is not designed to solve any problem on behalf of the American people. It is designed to jam people up and prevent Americans from voting.
To make sure only Americans vote is to make it hard for Americans to vote. Goodness. This is why we call it the Tower Babbling. And that's a wrap for today's Just That, Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is. Yes.
On a Disciple's View.
Anthony from Chicago, Illinois, by way of Indianapolis. He explains in his note, he travels back and forth. Anthony writes to the program, Dear Todd, I listen to you when I'm on the roads and the podcast when I'm not able to get you on radio. My comment is about your personal notes, and it goes like this. TMI, dude. Too much information. I listen to your personal notes every time, and I've sometimes pulled over, and I've sometimes cried, but you often make me really uncomfortable with the level of sharing. I think there needs to be a limit. There's just some things we don't need to know as the audience. I prefer to have an image of you in my mind and not always have the mysterious parts filled in. I appreciate the program. I've never missed a personal note. I just find myself really uncomfortable. I hope you take this under consideration. Praise you for what you do. And I love what AFR does for our country and for people's souls. I will continue to listen, Anthony. Anthony, thanks for the note. And on a personal note today. Fact is, you're not the only one who feels that way. And I really, really, really hurt a family member by talking about a family member of this program. And that will never happen again. Wasn't the first time, and it happened over many, many years, and things have changed. So that will never happen again. But I will tell you this. I don't have that filter. It's the filter of not talking about that family member. Got it. But I do not see a difference between you and me. I have a unique job. There's very few national radio hosts, and there's going to be fewer. Because of what's happening in media. AFR is a very, very unique place. It's a privilege to be here. But I don't see any difference between us. You do what you do, and I do what I do. And I also believe this, that you deserve to know who I am. You deserve to know that because you are kind enough to spend this time with me, and so you should know from where I come. I come from a broken home. My dad used to smash walls. He had no outlet for his frustration, so he would kick in doors. Praise God, he never hit my mom. He never hit me. He would never put hands on any of us. He was huge and able to hurt. And his mom had told him time and again, you are too big to be angry. Do not be angry because you could hurt somebody. You're too big. So I watched this bubble up in my father and explode. And this broken home began when I was in first grade. And I remember sitting in the front room, having that talk that so many of us have had. It's not your fault. We both love you very much. My mom was covering for my dad and his affair. Out of that affair, I got the gift of a great half-brother, wonderful man. Other than that, it was horrible. But I remember sitting in the front room thinking, gosh, you know, it never occurred to me to think it was my fault. I was a little boy. I was, like I said, going into first grade. I didn't think I had the power to affect your marriage. But that's what you say to kids. It's not your fault. Mom and Dad still love you. I come from a broken home in that my dad became really passive aggressive. He was really upset at the amount of child support he was supposed to pay. My dad was a rebellious man, and he decided to not work for a while to not pay child support. And he also was passive aggressive at showing up for visits. Now, he never missed a visit. It was Wednesday nights and every other weekend, but my dad made a point of being late because he did not like the fact that the court determined when he showed up. So he couldn't be early, so he was late. I am not late. I am rarely late. If I am fanatically early because I consider it rudeness and I remember the emotional hurt and I remember losing respect for my father, he's late again. So I operate by the military phrase. I didn't serve, but I love the phrase. Early is on time and on time's late. I've never cheated on a girlfriend, not even in junior high, ever. I've gotten too close to women emotionally. My wife is aware of this. I'm aware of it. Wonderful women. But I would never cross that line. I couldn't. Physically, because I saw the mistakes of my father. I come from that brokenness. I deplore so much about the way my father viewed himself. That I've made an effort to be a man I can respect. I fail. When I began being discipled, my view of my father changed and the brokenness changed. And I began to look back at those times and seeing God's evident hand in forging me. You're going to be a man who will not commit adultery. You're going to be a man who will stay and fight for family, even when you are tempted to do otherwise. Even when it's hard and you have, that's it, I'm done. Are there married people for 29 years who haven't gone through the that's it, I'm done phase? We would do well as churches and church leaders to admit there are times when married couples get to the I'm done. I can't, it'll kill me, I can't. And so I look back at this brokenness and this broken home, and I look at the way God was evident there. I look at the people he put in front of me at the most important time of my life, when I was going to get a car and drive and have independence and do what I wanted. He put in front of me the first godly friend I ever had, who came from a secure home, an intact home, a married home, where divorce was never considered. Just at the time that I was being independent enough to go out and make the mistakes my father made. Just at that time. And that family encountered my dad as a kind man, as a man who helped their youngest son with his dream of driving quarter midgets. They grew to love my father and to respect him. And my dear friend Matthew, that godly man who brought me to God, grew to love Big T. And grew to help me understand that through the brokenness from which I came, God said, you're going to be broken in different ways, Todd. But you've been equipped in ways that wouldn't have happened without the refining fire. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because he first loved us, we speak his Word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ and make disciples of all nations until we all speak again together through his grace. May the peace of God that surpasses all understanding rest upon you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.